22. Have a nice vacation? Uncle Jack smiled at him. You've led us quite a chase. You shouldn't do that, boy. Toby wanted to hit him, but although the guards let go his arms when they shoved him into the room, his wrists were tied. Uncle Jack stopped smiling and glanced at Judge Bruder.
Thor, you've never appreciated that Judge Bruder and I worked for your father, and for your grandfather. Naturally, we know what's best, but you've given us trouble, and now we'll show you how we handle little boys who don't appreciate decent treatment. We teach them.
Ready, Judge? Judge Bruder smiled savagely and took the whip from behind him.
Bend him over the desk.
Phoebe woke up gasping. Whew, a bad one. He looked around the small hotel room he was in and tried to remember where he was. For days he had moved daily, sometimes half around the planet. He had become sophisticated in the folkways of this planet, enough not to attract attention, and even had a new ID card, quite as good as a real one. It had not been difficult once he realized that underworlds were much the same everywhere. He remembered now, this was America du Sud. The bed alarm sounded, just midnight, time to leave. He dressed and glanced at his baggage, decided to abandon it. He walked down the back stairs, out the back way. Aunt Lizzie had not liked the Yukon cold, but she put up with it. Eventually someone called and reminded Lita that there were few shopping days to Christmas. So they left. At Uranium City, Thorby managed to return the call. Garsh grinned.
I'll see you in the district court in and for the county of Rubeck, Division 4, at 9:59 the morning of January 4th. Now get lost. Completely.
So, at San Francisco, Thorby and Lita had a tiff in the presence of Aunt Lizzie. Lita wanted to go to Nice. Thorby insisted on Australia. Thorby said angrily, Keep the air car, I'll go by myself. He flounced out and bought a ticket for Great Sydney. They pulled a rather old washroom trick, tubed under the bay, and, convinced that his bodyguard had been evaded, counted the cash Lita had slipped him as privately as they had quarreled publicly. It came to a little under 200,000 credits. There was a note saying that she was sorry it wasn't more, but she had not anticipated needing money. While waiting at the South American field, Thorby counted what was left of Lita's money, and reflected that he had cut it fine, both time and money. Where did it all go? Photographers and reporters gave him a bad time at Rubeck City. The place swarmed with them. But he pushed through and met Garsh inside the bar at 9:58. The old man nodded.
Sit down. His honor will be out soon.
The judge came out, and a clerk intoned the ancient promise of justice.
Draw nigh, and ye shall be heard,
Garsh remarked.
Bruder has this judge on a leash.
Huh? Then why are we here?
You're paying me to worry. Any judge is a good judge when he knows he's being watched. Look behind you.
Thorby did so. The place was so loaded with press that a common citizen stood no chance.
I did a good job, if I do say so.
Garsh hooked a thumb at the front row.
A galoot with the big nose is the ambassador from Proxima. The old thief next to him is chairman of the Judiciary Committee.
He broke off. Thorby could not spot Uncle Jack, but Bruder presided over the other table. He did not look at Thorby. Nor could Thorby find Lita. They made him feel very much alone, but Garsh finished opening formalities, sat down and whispered,
Message for you. Young lady says to say good luck.
Thorby was active only in giving testimony, and that after many objections, counter-objections, and warnings from the bench. While he was being sworn, he recognized in the front row a retired chief justice of the hegemonic Ultimate Court, who had once dined at Rudbeck. Then Thorby did not notice anything, for he gave his testimony in deep trance, surrounded by hypnotherapists. Although every point was chewed endlessly, only once did the hearing approach drama. The court sustained an objection by Bruder, in such fashion that a titter of unbelief ran around the room and someone stamped his feet. The judge turned red.
"Now, order! The bailiffs will clear the room!"
The move to comply started, over protests of reporters. But the front two rows sat tight and stared at the judge. The high ambassador from the Vegan League leaned toward his secretary and whispered. The secretary started slapping a silent steno. The judge cleared his throat.
Unless this unseemly behavior ceases at once. This court will not tolerate disrespect.
Thorby was almost surprised when it ended.
Must therefore be conclusively presumed that Crichton Bradley Rudbeck and Martha Bradley Rudbeck did each die, are now dead, and furthermore did meet their ends in common disaster. May their souls rest in peace. Let it be so recorded.
The court banged his gavel.
If custodians of wills of the descendants, if wills there be, are present in this court, let them now come forward.
There was no hearing about Thorby's own shares. Thorby signed a receipt for certificates thereto in the judge's chambers. Neither Weemsby nor Bruder was present. Thorby took a deep breath as Garsh and he came out of chambers.
"I can hardly believe that we've won."
Garsh grinned. "Don't kid yourself. We won the first round on points. Now it begins to get expensive."
Thorby's mouth sagged. Rudbeck guards moved in and started taking them through the crowd. Garsh had not overstated it. Bruder and Weemsby sat tight, still running Rudbeck and associates, and continued to fight. Thorby never did see his parents' proxies. His only interest in them now was to see whether, as he suspected, the differences between the papers Bruder had prepared and those of his parents lay in the difference between revocable and revocable only by mutual agreement. But when the court got around to ordering them produced, Bruder claimed that they had been destroyed in routine clearing from files of expired instruments. He received a 10-day sentence for contempt, suspended, and that ended it. But while Weemsby was no longer voting the shares of Martha and Crichton Rudbeck, neither was Thorby. The shares were tied up while the wills were being proved. In the meantime, Bruder and Weemsby remained officers of Rudbeck and Associates, with a majority of directors backing them. Thorby was not even allowed in Rudbeck building, much less in his old office. Weemsby never went back to Rudbeck estate. His belongings were sent to him. Thorby moved Garsh into Weemsby's apartment. The old man slept there often. They were very busy. At one point, Garsh told him that there were 97 actions, for or against, moving or pending, relating to the settlement of his estate. The wills were simple, in essence. Thorby was the only major heir. But there were dozens of minor bequests. There were relatives who might get something if the wills were set aside. The question of legally dead was again raised. The presumption of common disaster versus deaths at different times was hashed again. And Thorby's very identity was questioned. Neither Bruder nor Weemsby appeared in these actions. Some relative or stockholder was always named as petitioner. Thorby was forced to conclude that Uncle Jack had kept everyone happy. But the only action that grieved him was brought by his grandparents, Bradley, asking that he be made their ward because of incompetence. The evidence, other than the admitted fact that he was new to the complexities of Terran life, was his guardsman medical record. Dr. Krishnamurti had endorsed that he was potentially emotionally unstable and should not be held fully answerable for actions under stress. Garsh had him examined in blatant publicity by the physician to the Secretary General of the Hegemonic Assembly. Thorby was found legally sane. It was followed by a stockholder's suit asking that Thorby be found professionally unequipped to manage the affairs of Rudbeck and Associates in private and public interest. Thorby was badly squeezed by these maneuvers. He was finding it ruinously expensive to be rich. He was heavily in debt from legal costs and running Rudbeck estate, and had not been able to draw his own accumulated royalties as Bruder and Weemsby continued to contend, despite repeated adverse decisions, that his identity was uncertain. But a weary time later, a court three levels above the Rudbeck District Court awarded to Thorby, subject to admonitions as to behavior, and unless revoked by court, the power to vote his parents' stock until such time as their estates were settled. Thorby called a general meeting of stockholders, on stockholders' initiative, as permitted by the bylaws, to elect officers. The meeting was in the auditorium of Rudbeck Building. Most stockholders on Terra showed up, even if represented by proxy. Even Lita popped in at the last minute, called out merrily, "Hello, everybody!" Then turned to her stepfather. "Daddy, I got the notice and decided to see the fun, so I jumped into the bus and hopped over. I haven't missed anything, have I?" She barely glanced at Thorby, although he was on the platform with the officers. Thorby was relieved and hurt. He had not seen her since they had parted at San Francisco. He knew that she had residence at Rudbeck Arms in Rudbeck City and was sometimes in town, but Garsh had discouraged him from getting in touch with her.
"Man's a fool," says a woman, "when she's made it plain she doesn't want to see him."
So he simply reminded himself that he must pay back her loan with interest as soon as possible. Weensby called the meeting to order, announced that, in accordance with the call, the meeting would nominate and elect officers.
"Minutes and old business postponed by unanimous consent."
Bang.
"Let the secretary call the roll for nominations for chairman of the board."
His face wore a smile of triumph. The smile worried Thorby. He controlled, his own and his parents, just under 45% of the voting stock. From the names used in bringing suits and other indirect sources, he thought that Weensby controlled about 31%. Thorby needed to pick up 6%. He was counting on the emotional appeal of Rudbeck of Rudbeck, but he couldn't be sure. Even though Weensby needed more than three times as many uncertain votes, uncertain to Thorby, they might be in Weensby's pocket. But Thorby stood up and nominated himself through his own stock. "Thor Rudbeck of Rudbeck." After that, it was pass, 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 over and over again, until Weensby was nominated. There were no other nominations.
"The secretary will call the roll," Weensby intoned.
"Announce your votes by shares as owners, followed by votes as proxy. The clerk will check serial numbers against the great record. Thor Rudbeck, of Rudbeck."
Thorby voted all 45% minus that he controlled, and sat down feeling very weary. But he got out a pocket calculator. There were 94,000 voting shares. He did not trust himself to keep tally in his head. The secretary read on. The clerk droned his checks of the record. Thorby needed to pick up 5,657 votes to win by one vote. He began slowly to pick up odd votes. 232, 906, 1,917. Some of them directly, some through proxy. But Weensby picked up votes also. Some shareholders answered passed a proxy or failed to respond. As the names marched past and these missing votes did not appear, Thorby was forced to infer that Weensby held those proxies himself. But still, the additional votes for Rudbeck of Rudbeck mounted. 2205, 3036, 4309. And there it stuck. The last few names passed. Garsh leaned toward him.
"Just the Sunshine Twins left."
"I know." Thorby put away his calculator, feeling sick. So, Weensby had won, after all. The secretary had evidently been instructed what names to read last.
"The Honorable Kurt Bruder."
Bruder voted his one qualifying share for Weensby.
"Our chairman, a Mr. John Weensby."
Weensby stood up and looked happy.
"In my own person, I vote one share. By proxies delivered to me, and now with the secretary, I vote..."
Thorby did not listen. He was looking for his hat.
"The tally being complete, I declare..."
the secretary began.
"No!"
Lita was on her feet.
"I'm here myself. This is my first meeting, and I'm going to vote."
Her stepfather said hastily,
That's all right, Lita. That mustn't interrupt."
He turned to the secretary.
"It doesn't affect the result."
"But it does. I cast 1,880 votes for Thor, Rudbeck of Rudbeck."
Weensby stared.
"Lita Weensby!"
She retorted crisply.
"My legal name is Lita Rudbeck."
Bruder was shouting,
"Illegal! The vote has been recorded. It's to..."
"Oh, nonsense!" shouted Lita. "I'm here and I'm voting. Anyhow, I canceled that proxy.
I registered it in the post office in this very building and saw it delivered and signed for at the principal offices of this corporation. That's the right phrase, isn't it, Judge? 10 minutes before the meeting was called to order. Hmm? If you don't believe me, send down for it. But what of it? I'm here. Touch me. Hmm. Then she turned and smiled at Thorby. Thorby tried to smile back and whispered savagely to Garsh, "Why did you keep this a secret?"
"And let honest John find out that he had to beg, borrow, or buy some more votes? Oh, no. He might have won. She kept him happy, just as I told her to. That's quite a girl, Thorby. Better option her."
5 minutes later, Thorby, shaking and white, got up and took the gavel that Weemsby had dropped. He faced the crowd. "We will now elect the rest of the board," he announced, his voice barely under control. The slate that Garsh and Thorby had worked out was passed by acclamation, with one addition, Lita. Again she stood up.
"Oh, no, you can't do this to me."
"Out of order. You've assumed responsibility, now accept it." She opened her mouth, closed it, sat down. When the secretary declared the result, Thorby turned to Weemsby. "You are general manager also, are you not?"
"Yes."
"You're fired. Your one share reverts. Don't try to go back to your former office. Just get your hat and go." Bruder jumped up. Thorby turned to him. "You too. Sergeant-in-arms, escort them out of the building."